coming up on this episode of Inside Pop.
I didn't think we lived in a world where there was the potential for a Rihanna and NERD collaboration, but Amita, we do, and we're going to talk all about it.
We're also going to talk about the problem of sexual harassment and sexism in the entertainment industry. How have we dealt with it ourselves, and what should be done in the future?
Plus, I'm so glad my initial feelings were totally wrong, review of Thor Ragnarok, and of course, the big sell right now on Inside Pop.
Hey, y'all. I'm Amita Patel.
And I'm Sean David Johnson, and this is Inside Pop. We are your weekly dive deep inside the world of pop culture.
Last week, a music miracle came to me via our good friend, James Barker, a.k.a. DJ Chaotic. Go back, listen to our conversations with him on the podcast. We've had a few. He's amazing. Amen. And we always share so much great music with each other, and he just said, OMG, and just sent me the link to Lemon. And I was like, I just read the title of the link. I was like, no, this is impossible. What is this? This is a joke. NERD and Rihanna. I was like, what is this amazing musical collaboration?
And that's before you even heard it.
Just before I heard it. And it was the video he sent me, actually. So I was like watching this video, and I'm just like trying to process all of the amazingness that I'm hearing. And I'm just also just like getting angry at Pharrell. I was like, really good. Good job, Pharrell. You kept a secret. You were doing your happy thing, your hitting figures thing. And I was just like, you didn't let anybody know that NERD was coming back. And oh my God, you came back with a vengeance. I'm so excited. I loved NERD. I love the Neptunes. I love everything Pharrell. So I was so, so excited.
Yeah. Can you refresh my memory? Because I remember, I think I worked at VH1, so this is a long time ago, when In Search Of came out. But can you refresh my memory and maybe school our listeners, NERD, Neptunes, Pharrell, kind of what's the formation of all of these groups and people and collaborations?
Well, the Neptunes are Pharrell and Chad Hugo. They were producers, and they were behind some really awesome 90s hip-hop tracks that I love, like Super Thug by Noriega and, you know, tracks by Clips. There's just such really great, you know, hip-hop in the 90s that I believe the Neptunes were behind. I mean, they even won a Grammy in the early 2000s as well. I think they're more early 2000s than in late 90s, but early 2000s, they won a Grammy for like non-classical producer of the year. Like, this is how incredible they were for producing hip hop in the early aughts. And they, Grindin' by Clips, you all know Grindin', you know, that beat is like unheard of when you first heard it. You're like, what is this? But you love it.
Yeah.
That's how iconic they are to me, is the Neptunes. And then they added another member. I think his name is Shay. They started their own group called NERD, which means No One Ever Really Dies. And they kind of came out with like songs like Lap Dance and Provider. And
Yes.
All of these amazing tracks that, again, had this really strong like bass, drums, kind of hard but melodic kind of sound to me. And I loved Pharrell's voice. He was kind of like this soft voice, but was like still like really, really like rough too.
Right. And I love that they were.
I love them.
And I love that they're kind of punk, right? Like there's like a punk thing about them. They're also kind of funk. It's just like a real singular sound. And we were together at Afropunk earlier this summer, and you definitely feel an NERD vibe there on some of the stages. There's definitely this kind of hip-hop punk genre that exists, and I give NERD credit for keeping that alive. Like, I guess it started with groups like Bad Brains and Living Color, and NERD definitely kept that flame going. So may we talk about the video for Lemon, please?
Shall we? Yes, please. I still have to track. Did you track down the name of that dancer? Because I need to be her friend, and she needs to teach me all of her moves.
We will put our Nancy Drew Hardy Boys hats on, and we will find out as much about the dancer as you guys need to know, and we'll put some stuff in our show notes. She is amazing. Sexy MF.
I know. Seriously, I was sitting here like, I thought I could dance. I cannot. I was just like, that's how you twerk. It's just like so incredible.
Yeah. I'm going to put her in the pantheon, and here it is, big praise for me. So there was that Kanye video that came out. Was that a year ago? Time goes by so quickly.
Oh, Fade. Oh my gosh. Tiana
so
Taylor.
That video. I'm gonna put the Lemon video in that same category.
Yes.
Incredibly sexy, beautiful, incredibly talented woman just doing one of the things she does best, just dancing by herself. Guess what else is in that pantheon? Guess what is at the top of that? What started this? Sorry, I'm kind of calmed down. Guess
You're
what
really
started this video genre? Janet Jackson, Pleasure
I
Principle.
I knew you were going to say it.
We all need to go to school. And if you've never seen it, Google it. If you have seen it but haven't seen it in a while, Google it. Janet Jackson's Pleasure Principle, I believe, was the beginning of the music video where it's just about a beautiful woman dancing for her own pleasure and style.
Yes. And joy. And just like expression.
Yeah.
I love that. And yes, exactly what I was thinking too. It's like, you got to go back to Janet. It's where it all began.
11 Days of Janet, y'all.
Side note, if you don't know, we're doing 11 Days of Janet. I might be a day behind, but I will catch up.
Right. She has 11 studio albums, and we are, when we started this, we were 11 days from seeing her live at Barclays in Brooklyn. So we're basically listening to one Janet album per day-ish to just get pumped for the concert. So God bless you, Janet Jackson.
Oh, I can't wait. It's my first Janet concert, y'all.
This is incredible. I can't believe it's your first Janet show, but I'm so glad. I will be there with you for your first Janet show.
It's all is right in the world that you're there with me for my first Janet.
Guess what, ladies and gentlemen? You'll hear about it when it happens. So, and then musically, I just, like, again, it's like this Lemon is just classic NERD. It's kind of like there's a part that's really funky, and then... All right, I'm going to say this. For whatever reasons, I was not a fan of Rihanna. Like, I liked some singles, but I didn't get why people were obsessed with her, why they thought she was so talented, why they thought she was so clever and funny and snarky on Instagram. I didn't care.
I didn't like her this much.
Jeez, I don't know. I had issues, but...
I love me some Rihanna.
She's winning me over.
Good.
I never really thought of her as a rapper, but I like her rap skills.
Oh, I do, too. I do, too. I was kind of getting... You know, her voice sounds so different when she raps, obviously. And so I was getting like some Beyonce feels in there too. And I was like, but this is this other level of Rihanna, which I am so embracing. And yeah, I can't with this whole single and this video and everything.
You love
and,
it. And
they also announced they're going to come out with a new album.
Yeah,
I'm
let's
so
not bury
excited.
The lead. That is really exciting. Oh, so what do we know about this new album?
It's going to be amazing. It's called No One Ever Really Dies, aptly titled after their group. And, yeah, just a few collabs on there. Maybe people you might've heard of, Kendrick Lamar and MIA on one track. That's just one of the features. Andre 3000 people, Andre freaking 3000 and NERD in the same room. Stop it. Stop it right now.
Yeah, that's something that's meant to be.
I know.
Side note, Andre 3000, he gets the MVP for guest appearances, I would say over the past 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. The guest spot he did on the Tribe Called Quest album from last year was phenomenal. Yes. He's on Kendrick's album as well, I think.
I think so. He did. I loved Party, which he did with Beyonce.
Yeah,
love that track.
He's on that amazing Erykah Badu telephone themed album. He's on a song called Hello, which is my favorite song on that album. So he's been just making a career of just dropping in for a track and elevating the whole album with his voice and skills. I'd love a whole album from him at some point.
Yes, please, Andre, holla.
Yeah,
just drop one surprise. We'd totally take it. Yeah. And then I guess Gucci Mane and Wale is on a song, and Ed Sheeran, which I'm actually really curious to hear what Ed Sheeran and NERD are going to do together. I think it actually would be really great. So yeah, they have not said when this album is coming out, which is pure torture for me, but I'm excited for it. As soon as it comes out, you know you'll hear about it from us.
Yes, I'm hoping within the next 4 weeks, because I know a lot of bands release music right around this time, holiday time, because it's, I think, other than summer, it's the time of the year that has the largest music purchase, consumer music purchase. Mm-hmm. So that would be a smart thing for them to do. And listen, they're producers. So I think all of these guest spots aren't just for show or just look who we got. They know how to produce for specific talent and voices. So I think all these people they're bringing in are going to shine because they're working with NERD.
100%. 100%. I really can't wait. Seriously. I don't know what I'm going to do, because if it comes out in the next few weeks, there's going to be a lot of problems with my top 10 music of the year. May change the whole game, guys.
Okay, well, if we haven't convinced you to listen to this song and check out the video, then we failed. But you should definitely do it. It's a great song, and we'll continue to follow NERD. And let's move on to some movie news, Amita, shall we?
Yes, Thor Ragnarok was released in theaters this past weekend. I, sadly, did not see it yet. But thankfully, there's two people on this podcast, and Sean did. Sean, what are your thoughts?
I am going to journey back a few months ago. Neither Amita nor I were kind to Thor Ragnarok. We made fun of the name. And then we actually looked at the trailer. We did an episode where we looked at some trailers and discussed whether they did a good job of getting us excited for the film. And we did not have kind things to say about Thor Ragnarok. I'm going to take it all back, because in a nutshell, and you've probably read a lot of reviews and some articles, maybe even heard a couple of other podcasts, but Thor Ragnarok is big, gigantic, fun entertainment. It's so funny, so well written. It's maybe one of the best Marvel scripts that exists. And I think it's also one of the best performed, one of the best acted Marvel films. Chris Hemsworth has been hinting, showing you that he's got some good comic chops. He was in Ghostbusters 2. He had those funny Thor little viral videos. Listen, I think I give so much credit to Joss Whedon, but I think that Joss Whedon originated the, and this comes from comic books. In comic books, you have Spider-Man, you know, constantly getting shot at, having things bombs thrown at him, and he's cracking wise the entire time. And I think that's definitely a, you know, joke while you're in mortal danger thing that comes from comic books. I think Joss Whedon did that really well in the Avengers. And I think a lot of great writers and directors have followed in his footsteps. James Gunn of Guardians of the Galaxy does it really well. And now I'm going to give some major credit to, forgive me for the mispronunciation if it happens, Taika Waititi, who is a really great director. He did Hunt for the Wilder People, which I know our friends Joe Cass love. I haven't seen it yet. And he also did this really funny vampire mockumentary, which, again, is on my list because I love vampires and I like mockumentaries. And yeah, but yeah, I don't know if I can say much more than has probably already been said, but I just do think that it's really up there. I'm going to say it's one of my top five favorite Marvel films.
Whoa.
It's in my top five. Actually, why don't I go a step further? I'm going to say that Thor Ragnarok is in my top seven superhero films of all time.
Oh my gosh. I was not expecting this.
Yeah. Why not?
I don't even know how to react, but that's amazing. Oh, I need to stop this podcast now and go see it.
Yeah.
That's what I need
to do. You'll love it. I make you that promise. Should I big sell it to you, Amina? Should I big sell you Thor Ragnarok?
No, because I'm going to go see it anyway.
Yeah.
And it's my turn to big sell. So.
Okay.
But I mean, you essentially just did right now.
And I guess, well, here's a question for you. I mean, I know you were busy this weekend, but how do you feel about this? I mean, everyone's calling it peak superhero. There are so many superhero movies and TV shows. Do you have the same anticipation as you had, say, a year or two ago? Do you not feel the need? Do you wait until you hear reviews? How are you feeling about superhero films these days?
I am feeling moderate to good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's basically the same. Moderate to above average about it. I think that it's like we're alluding to a lot of my personal life right now, but you know, they always say, what's your pain level 1 to 10? So I've gotten a lot of those questions. So I think they're spread out enough that I don't feel like I'm overwhelmed by them.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder Woman was the shining light of this year to me. And I think that gave me so much more love for the DC universe, at least for that movie. We'll see Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
And Spider-Man Homecoming was super entertaining too. So I'm feeling good about the superheroes that we're seeing and that we're getting. I don't think it's overkill yet. We'll see, though. I think the jury's out here.
I think a lot of people are saying that you need to look, DC, you're too dark. It's not working. You need to go light. I think that's too easy of a comment to make, because I think that Logan was one of my favorite films of the year. Spoiler alert for my movie list. It's dark. It's really sad. It really goes deep and deals with some serious issues. And I remember 3 laughs in that movie, but I loved it. It was so dull. One, I think you can still do dark superhero and that works, right? You can, it's not just aping The Dark Knight. And then, but I think you could also do funny. I read a review of Thor Ragnarok where they said, we're not even going to call Thor Ragnarok an action comedy. It's a comedy that also happens to have some action. And I might agree with that review.
Oh, wow.
So,
okay.
So I think it's not as simple as the lighter stuff is winning now, because I think, you know, Luke Cage had some dark elements, but that was great.
Yeah.
I don't know about Inhumans. Yeah. I know Inhumans is getting panned on TV. Mm. I know The Defenders felt kind of lackluster. So yeah. I guess there is no secret formula, pun intended, to these superhero films. But I guess they just have to be done well. And if you're going to commit to darkness, have a reason for it. If you're going to like commit to having lots of yucks, make sure you've got the actors who can pull it off, and make sure there's a reason for that as well.
Yeah, no, that's a very good analysis, I think. I think maybe I'm not feeling as much of an overkill on it is because I didn't really take in The Defenders or Daredevil or Jessica Jones, so I'm not feeling an Inhumans. And what was that other one?
The Gifted.
Legion.
Yeah.
Legion.
Oh, Legion.
You know.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah. The Gifted. So now that you're saying them all and I'm saying them all, I'm like, yeah, there's a lot. But I think because I'm not consuming them all, and not one is for every person. So the ones that I am still faithful to, the Marvel universe, and the ones that I am still curious about, the DC universe, are still in decent / high regard to me.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Good. I like your, it's like you're curating. You're not just taking all the superhero stuff that's being thrown at you. I like that. I'm going to try to emulate that, because I am such an easy target. It's like this just little catnip dangling in front of me.
Yeah, but I think that's because it comes from your childhood and mine, right?
Yeah.
You consumed comic books as a kid and still love them to this day. I didn't, you know? So I'm looking at these films not from reading their comic books, not from knowing their backstories. I always would go with somebody and be like, was this like the comic book? That's where I come from, guys. Was Captain America this hot in the comic book? No, I'm kidding. Okay. I don't say that, but maybe I would. All right.
Oh, all right. That could be a segment about how comics have influenced my taste in certain things. So but that time is not now. So, but you do plan to see Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, I'm going to make a date to see it at some point this week because awesome. I can't wait.
Great.
And I ain't that busy. So I will for sure see it soon so we can discuss. And I think I need a good laugh in life. So this is going to be great.
It'll give you a few.
Yay. Can't wait.
All right. Awesome. So we're going to take a short break to hear a short message, but we'll be back to discuss the seemingly unending allegations of sexual assault and harassment that's flooding out of Hollywood. We'll be right back.
In celeb news this week, the hosts of Lady to Lady took a break from hanging with today's hottest comedians, actors, and writers to sell a sex machine. What'd they do with all that cash?
Rent a party bus to go to Magic Mike Live in Vegas, of course. All of this on the heels of a salacious sizzler session with Home Alone 4-star French Stewart.
Want to know what the f*** we're talking about? Tune into Lady to Lady whenever, wherever you listen to podcasts. Can you keep a secret? Neither can we.
Welcome back to Inside Pop. I'm Sean David Johnson.
And I'm Amita Patel. Last week, before Sean and I sat down to record, we actually had a quick discussion about whether we wanted to discuss the Kevin Spacey allegations on our podcast because they had just come out like the day before. The news, you know, kind of took us by surprise, but also we just couldn't really put together our thoughts and we decided not to really cover the story because it just didn't feel right at the moment.
Yeah, I think we've made a decision early on that we don't cover celebrity gossip, right? It's not what our podcast is about. It's not mm-hmm. what really engages us. And unlike, I don't know, a certain president of the United States, we also only like to speak when we're informed about things. So we wanted to take some time to digest and hear facts before we all of a sudden started spouting out our opinions.
Yeah. And then, of course, as the Spacey story continued to develop and even more allegations of sexual misconduct were leveled at him and other prominent figures in Hollywood, we decided that this is a story we do feel strongly about and we want to share our experiences and opinions.
So, Amita, I want to really start and ask you, you know, your kind of overall response over the past few weeks. It's a story that's really their new developments on a daily basis. So what's it been like for you, a woman who works in the entertainment industry? What's it been like for you hearing story after story after story after allegation after story?
It's such an interesting feeling to have because it makes me so sad. I'm so sad that these women had to endure this and felt like they couldn't speak out and just let it just sit inside them. You know, it happens. They didn't feel strong enough to say anything, or maybe they didn't feel somebody could, you know, believe them. And there's this weird power issue at play here in Hollywood. And to feel so muted as a person, it makes me so sad. And as a woman, it's even sadder because it was sexual conduct here, misconduct. And so the first, after every story after story after story came out, I was just like increasingly sad about it. But as each story came out and as more women came forward and as more people started to really speak up, it was empowering. And we have strength in numbers. And, you know, it goes back to something that I have really clung to in the last, I don't know, year or so, about sharing your story and being able to be vocal about what you've been through, mm-hmm. because you will always find a community. You never know who has been through an experience you have unless you say so, unless you speak up. And that's what's happening here. And so that is empowering. And so congratulations to all the women who found the strength to say something and to speak up. I know there are probably more, and hope that they feel that strength and empowerment to say something as well. That is their own decision, and I understand if it's too hard or difficult to do that. But again, I would hope this experience that unfortunately so many women have collectively had,
right,
in Hollywood, which, you know, we're only talking about Hollywood. There are probably other industries that, yes, are also having these issues. More people talking, more people, you know, sharing their unfortunate experience means hopefully learning, gathering strength, and making sure it doesn't happen again, you know?
Yeah, and I think it really is the thing that you said that really illuminates the issue for me is talking about it and the numbers. Because Rose McGowan, I remember her being one of the first people. There's a lot of bravery there. But I think it was no less brave for Lupita Nyong'o to write that op-ed for the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it took Lupita Nyong'o, I don't think she would have felt safe or comfortable, or I don't think her agents and managers would have wanted or allowed her to do that out of the blue, right?
Yep. Yeah, you're
but
right.
The fact that there is a sisterhood, a factually based group of women who are one by one by one by one by the dozens are coming forward. And then, of course, then it's not just Harvey Weinstein who's the monster, who's the culprit, but it's also empowering other people to talk about other people in Hollywood who have, you know, it's things as horrific as rape, but also mm-hmm. things as prevalent as grabbing, fondling. I read this great editorial, you know, so coming from my perspective as a man, I read this great editorial by a writer in the New York Times I really like, Charles M. Blow, and he wrote a short op-ed piece about, well, what are men supposed to do about this? And I think the one thing that's resonating with me is, you know, I consider myself very liberal, very progressive, very feminist, very pro-woman, but I can't help it. I have this entitlement that comes with being a man, right? I could walk down the street late at night and maybe forget that it might not be as comfortable an experience for a woman to do that. I could walk into a conference room full of men and not experience what you might experience if you did the same thing. You know, so I think it's important mm-hmm. for men in this situation, men who aren't these assholes who are sexually harassing and fondling and just abusing their power. It's important, I think, for progressive men to just be aware that we have privilege and that we need to support and listen. And if there's ever any environment where you see stuff like that happening, don't be complicit.
Yes. And I think that we hit on something else. It's a power thing, right? Like there is this weird connection to sex and power here that for some reason men feel that they can exert and have gotten away with doing it.
Right.
And therefore they continue to do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, as more people speak out, that hopefully can stop. But unfortunately, if it's inherently what somebody has done for many years and gotten away with it, I think they're just going to keep going, unfortunately.
I know.
And that makes me upset and angry.
And you think, I think people think, oh, Hollywood is liberal. New York, it's liberal. You know, the entertainment industry is full of liberals. But like Harvey Weinstein proved it, allegedly, but he's proved it beyond a shadow of a doubt. You can be a big old progressive liberal Democrat. You can donate money to Hillary Clinton, but you could still do things in your personal life that are the opposite, right? You can still denigrate women, but also give money to a female presidential candidate. So it's interesting. You told me something interesting offline, and I wanted to just quickly bring up Kevin Spacey, right? So we talked about him a little bit earlier, and we weren't sure whether we wanted to cover that because it felt like gossip at first, but I think it's kind of a larger issue. So what do you think about the fact that this is, I think, the big story of a man being accused by other men of sexual misconduct? How do you think the media is treating it any differently?
I don't think the media is treating it any differently. I think they're reporting as accusations, unfortunately, keep coming up. I think their most recent one is now something from Richard Dreyfuss's son, who felt like Kevin made some inappropriate moves on him. I think that it's similar parallel to the women coming out about Weinstein. Now somebody has spoken up and more people are speaking up. Mm-hmm. That is, I feel like media is covering that fairly equally.
Okay.
I think what I noticed, and I read an editorial or something somebody wrote about it, is that Kevin Spacey, a week ago, this is when Anthony Rapp, you know, wrote what he wrote about his encounter with Kevin, and then Kevin apologized and somehow came out too, and whatever.
don't get me started.
we're not getting started on that. Within days, they suspended House of Cards, they shut down production, and then he got fired.
Yeah.
And now the whole kind of world that Kevin Spacey has created, because let's be honest, House of Cards is what launched Netflix and the whole concept of binge watching. And he is nominated for Emmys every single year. I loved the show. I was watching it every season. He created this whole character and he was an incredible actor. And now his whole world is basically just imploded and he doesn't have a job and he's seeking rehab or doing whatever he can. But let's be honest, his career is now who knows what after all of this.
I know. And
I think that, like, Harvey Weinstein and even Bill Cosby in there, it took a lot of people, a lot of women to come out, and there were court cases with Cosby, and they're trying to get statute of limitations from these confessions about Weinstein. It just seems like there's so much legality with the women for things to be done to Weinstein and Cosby, in my opinion. And it was just like, nope, one confession from Anthony Rapp and then a couple more from the staff on House of Cards, and it's bye, Kevin. See ya.
Interesting. So do you think, and I'm not going to try to hold your feet to the fire, but you're saying is that you think that it's possible that because that men came forward as victims, their stories held more validity and or forced drastic action faster than when the women were the accusers?
It's what it feels like right now. Okay. I don't know if it is, but it's what it feels right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Listen, we don't know everything going on behind the scenes, but
no.
I think that theory has to be considered valid because we live in an unequal society where men are given more power and when men are sometimes taken more seriously, unfortunately. So I would back you on that. I definitely would.
And is it now, and I don't want to get, I hate to get into the details of it, is it that his actions towards, let's say, for a couple of them, younger men are just that much more worse than Weinstein's actions towards young actresses? You know, that's terrible to make a comparison. They're bad.
Right.
It's bad. Don't do it. Don't grope people. Don't assault them. Like, that's it.
Yeah. The Spacey thing is so complicated. He, whether it was strategy on his part or not, he made it even more complicated when he came out at the same time. Kevin Spacey, we knew you were gay. Everyone in entertainment knew you were gay. I think a lot of people outside of entertainment also knew you were gay and were just scratching their heads about why you would not come out. But the fact that he connected the accusations and his half-assed admission to also being an adult gay man, then we've got sexual attacks on 14-year-old boys, but then sexual misconduct on adult men. I think it's a very complicated, confusing story. There's a lot going on there with Kevin Spacey that, that you can't really discuss on Twitter. Like 140 characters won't do it.
No.
But I think it's right. Like, he's not a pedophile. And that's one interesting thing that I did read. We use that word too loosely. You know, pedophilia is about being attracted to children who are prepubescent. And in this case, he's been accused of going after teenage boys, which is actually another type of sexual problem. Condition.
Really?
Yeah,
it's
there's an article that someone shared with me. I think it's called hebephile. a hebephile or a ephebophile, but basically there are people who are attracted and act on a desire to be with young prepubescent children. But what Kevin Spacey has been accused of, and I think what Michael Jackson was accused of, was something different, which was people, boys who had hit puberty, but they weren't men. Also not right. Also really troublesome. Also, but from what I've read, psychologists have been trying to not have those things lumped together. But so yeah, so very, very, very problematic. And listen, I want to be a person who has compassion. You know, I as a New Yorker, I think you strive for that a lot, right? Like, I can't shut myself off. I have to have compassion for everyone. It's hard to have compassion for Kevin Spacey because I've heard he was just a very unnice. What does mean? I heard he was a mean person. unnice. You know, the fact that he did do that to a 14-year-old boy, if that was the case, I have trouble summing up some compassion for him. Listen, if his career's over, he had a really great run at it, maybe at the expense of others, ditto Harvey Weinstein. And listen, if they're sincerely going to get help, they should, because this shouldn't happen anymore. But I don't know. I'll say this, which is, and I want to speak as generally as possible, Amita, because I don't want to get Inside Pop sued. But when I was a producer somewhere, I had one experience of someone came to me and said that someone on my staff was sexually harassing someone else. And I was shocked again, because this is liberal New York and these are young, smart people working with me. How is this happening? And so just in a nutshell, and keeping it very general, I told human resources, they spoke to this person. 2 weeks later, this person said something sexual to the person he had been told not to say sexual stuff with. I'm not in that. I'm not in this person's head, but my thought is that it's, I think with some people, it's not about HR saying stop it and then they stop it. I think there's something inherent with people, whether it's a power play, whether they think they have the right to do it, whether there's just something not connecting and they don't understand.
Something they may have been raised seeing and thinking it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
You never know. You really don't.
Yeah. So, you know, so I tried to do everything right and do everything quickly and was amazed that sometimes when you try to do everything right and you think, okay, that's solution, it's solved. It wasn't solved. Right. And that's all I should say about it. But
it's terrible.
I think if that's a microcosm of there's awareness now and hopefully things will be put in place, unfortunately, problem will not be solved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that it's not a quick fix here.
Yeah.
You know, but as I've said, the conversation is happening. And if more people speak out, the more we can come together, support those people, and learn and try to change, you know?
Yeah. I think vigilance, right? Be vigilant. Know, you know, like know that there will be people who think that they have the power to do this, who A, can't help themselves, or B, will intentionally do this because they think they can get away with it. And I think we have to be vigilant about it, vocal, as you said, and willing to call people out and willing to make noise. Well, obviously, if there are further developments, if there are other things to discuss with this story, we will cover it. We'd also like to know how you feel. So please feel free to leave comments on our webpage or tweet us. Let us know what you make of this very tricky, very sensitive situation. You can find us at Pop Insiders on Twitter, or you can visit our webpage at insidepoppodcast.com.
We'll have the big sell right after this short message.
Hello, I'm Carrie Poppy.
And I'm Ross Blotcher, hosts of MaximumFun.org's Oh No, Ross and Carrie.
We wanted to tell you the good news that our podcast is now weekly.
Yeah, weekly. On Oh No, Ross and Carrie, we don't make extraordinary claims. We investigate them.
We go undercover with fringe religious groups, investigate paranormal claims, and participate in pseudoscientific medical treatments and report our findings to you.
In a time where alternative facts reign supreme, we cut through the murky spin to give you the real deal on topics like UFOs, the ITZY vaccination movement, Scientology, and even apocalyptic churches.
We're even undercover for some very exciting investigations right now.
Well, not right now, right now.
Yeah, that would be unwise.
That's Oh No, Ross and Carrie at MaximumFun.org.
We show up so you don't have to.
Welcome back to Inside Pop. I'm Amita Patel.
And I'm Sean David Johnson. And now it is time for The Big Sell. We just finished the Big Sell 30. It was 30 days of Big Sell. Now we're back to normal. Once a week, we Big Sell each other on something in pop culture we want the other one to experience. Last week, I decided to make Amita cry because I cried watching this George Michael documentary that I really enjoyed. Not perfect, but I really enjoyed it. That premiered on Showtime a couple of weeks ago. I Big Sold that to you, Amita. And very curious to hear what you think of it.
Thanks for making me cry.
Don't let the sun go down on me.
Thank you so much for this Big Sell. I am a huge George Michael fan, so I just ate up every minute of it, because if you don't know his music, this documentary gives you, it's like you're getting like a visual box set of his career, because you hear so many of his early hits with Wham and then going into his solo career, and you like hear the music, you see some performances or videos, and you just go, it really, really moves well from track to track, along with the incredible interviewees ranging from Elton John to Clive Davis to Nile Rodgers, Mary J, Stevie Wonder. I mean, the list goes on and on. I was just gobsmacked by all of these incredible artists speaking so highly of George Michael. I think what I took away from it was so interesting. This documentary, as you said, George was directing it. He put it together, you know. He was involved with this and was alive while this was being made. And so all of the things that everybody was saying about how incredible he was an artist, it felt like such legacy type language that everybody was talking about, which, you know, going into this, it's what people know to say, right? Because they're talking about a retrospective of his entire career. But they said all these things while he was alive.
Right.
And then for it to come out after he passed, it just was this interesting feeling listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
And hearing what they're all saying with such joy and revelation. And there was this really great thing that they did sometimes where they actually made people listen to a record, right? You know, they put a record player right next to them and they played one of the songs.
I loved that.
Oh my God. Yeah. I was like, we should do this in every documentary.
Yeah.
Like these are the things about production that I loved. And they did it with the models from Freedom, and they did it with a couple other artists. And it was amazing to hear musicians listening to other music and just feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I couldn't get enough of every single song they kept playing, and then learning a lot. You know, I was a kid when he came out and was a huge fan, but I was a kid, so I didn't know the battle he had with his record company. I didn't know he never really promoted one of his albums, mm-hmm. and it became a problem, which was one of my favorite albums, you know? So like all of that was just an education, you know?
Yeah.
And then obviously, you know, it was sad to see him go through so much pain, losing his first love. And, you know, he was very honest with everything that he kind of went through.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was, it's a great story of his career. And listen, it's the stuff that he wants you to know. There was very little,
yeah.
if anything, about his drug addiction or about the problems mm-hmm. he had with the law, mm-hmm. about his, and I think, listen, he enjoyed public anonymous sex, but he didn't really talk about that in the documentary, nor did anyone else. There were a couple of allusions to it, but I think, listen, he told the story he wanted to tell, and it is interesting because everyone's speaking about him in the present tense, so that proves your point that this was made while he was alive, because it's George Michael is such a great singer, George Michael, so not past tense. And there were parts where I just wanted to hear a little bit more. For example, he's with Wham. It tells the Wham story really well. One sentence. And then I decided to go solo. I really wanted to know, as a former fan of Wham, how did you break the news to Andrew Ridgeley? Was there a friendship that had dissolved? Just a little bit of detail completely, swept under the rug.
Right. And that was the second part of this, is like, you could kind of tell that he was behind this and it was with him involved, because some of those details, like what happened with Wham and Andrew Ridgeley, AKA Andrew Ridgeley, isn't in this documentary. Right. There's this huge question mark there.
Yeah.
And then unfortunately, because I think you were saying he was finishing up this documentary when he passed, it felt like the end just came like a speeding train.
Yeah.
It was just like, here it is, and we're wrapping it up and it's done. And I was just like, whoa, wait, we just like fast forwarded a decent chunk of the second half of his career here. And I wish that we spent a little more time there, but I think obviously because he died, this is what they could kind of put together. So, it's not it's clearly not a perfect documentary, but I think if you don't know his music, this is a great way to know his music and know how important he was in the 80s and 90s. In, music. And then also, if you do love his music, I highly recommend you see this.
Yeah.
Because it is a real walk through his talent.
Yeah. No matter what you think about the public persona, really, no matter what you think about those little short shorts from the Wham days, that voice.
It's a great.
And the songwriting talent is undeniable. Pop music is as important as classical music, is as important as opera. And he was one of our great pop musicians. It was I have two favorite parts where he talks about moving into the realm of Michael and Prince and Madonna. And, I love anytime those three are mentioned.
Yes.
But it was really interesting. This young man from England, all of a sudden, is with the heavy hitters, and it was interesting hearing him comment on that. And then my other favorite part was the beginning, the documentary opening with Adele's version of Fast Love.
Oh my god, that made me cry. You made me cry from the first beginning of it. I was like, wait, where's this?
I want that recording on Spotify. Oh my god.
Have it somewhere.
I've searched, help me find it.
We need it. Okay, I'll help you find it. I need it too, because I just loved it so much, and it was one of my favorite George Michael songs. What I learned was how young he was.
Yeah.
Through everything, because he was saying that when he did the Freddie Mercury tribute concert, he was like 27 or 28. And they have this great, like, behind the scenes footage of him, like, sitting backstage with David Bowie and Liza Minnelli. And I was like, he's 27, 28 years old, like you said, with the heavy hitters, just able to go out there and perform at such a level.
Yeah.
It's pretty young, and to have such a huge career to lead up to that, just that moment, it's just impressive.
His performance of Somebody to Love, which you see a good chunk of it in this documentary, but you also need to go to YouTube and watch the full thing just to cry some more, because I will cry watching it. It's meaning upon meaning, right? Like he's looking down. Well, he's singing to Freddie Mercury, who died too young from AIDS, and he's looking into the audience at his lover who's been diagnosed with AIDS. And again, you guys, I can't believe it, but 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that diagnosis was a death sentence. And so, not that long ago, but such a powerful performer. And we should do a segment someday on favorite music documentaries.
Yeah.
This inspires so much. Favorite live performances, favorite duets, his duet with Aretha Franklin. Come on.
I'm so glad that was in there. I love it. I think that should be our duet song, actually.
Yeah. So. Oh, don't do that to me. But then he also has that great duet with our girl, Mary J. Blige.
Oh my God, that gave me tears too. Ah, I love it. Because I love that Stevie Wonder song. It's one of my favorite Stevie Wonder songs.
Yes.
So them doing it, two of my favorite artists doing a song by another favorite artist, was like, just, yeah. Yeah.
I'm catching feelings, Amita, right now. Oh, catching feelings.
I'm going to catch feels all day.
All right. this is a more lengthier discussion, but I think George deserves that. What is your rating, ma'am?
My rating for this is a healthy 3.25 stars.
Love it.
Thank you so much for this.
Glad you liked it.
even with the tears. all right. Well, I have a different big sell for you. I was going to try to sell you another music documentary, but I thought I'd hold off on it. Yep. And I am going to sell you something else that I saw yesterday on, I know I'm an old soul here, but I do watch CBS Sunday Morning and I love it. CBS Sunday Morning, if you guys don't know, is an incredible news magazine program where they do a lot of news, art, culture, kind of interesting life stories, and they bring them to life. And it's just, it's a really great way
just
to, what?
I'm going to say, just ask your great grandmother. She'll tell you.
Oh,
it's
God,
a great show.
Call my dad and
old people,
he'll tell you about it too.
Old people.
My dad's the reason I watch it, because he watched it every Sunday. And so I love it.
Me too.
And
me too.
I feel like I learned so much. You get really great in-depth interviews. You know, they do an interview with, like, you know, Natalie Portman when Black Swan was coming out. And, you know, so you'll get some interesting pop culture in there, but then you really learn a lot about other things too. So I always really enjoyed it, and I still do. And I happened to catch it on Sunday. And I was going to text you because there is an interview with Ta-Nehisi Coates in there.
That's why I DVR'd
which is
it.
Probably why you DVR'd it. And I knew that you were going to see it. So I was like, he knows. So that is not what I'm selling you, but it's great that it's on your DVR. I'd watched the Ta-Nehisi Coates thing, and then this other profile came up, which I really, really loved, because it is about this really incredible florist. But it's like he's more than a florist. He's like a floral artist and kind of just, I don't know what to call him, genius. And his name is Makoto Azuma. And he is just incredible with what he puts together with flowers. And I know you.
You do know me.
You know how much you love gardening.
You know me.
And you know how, I know you. And you know how much I love flowers. And so therefore I was just like, this is meant for me to watch, but I knew that you would love it. He is based out of Tokyo, and I know how much you love Japan.
Oh my God, keep talking. Keep talking, woman.
you know, and he doesn't speak English, so they translate what he says, and everything he says in this interview is so eloquent and beautiful. And he does these awesome videos and installations of flowers and trees in like a desert or like a frozen tundra as well. So he's not just like, I'm making a bouquet. He really looks outside of the box and does some really cool stuff as well with flowers that I thought were really cool. So I'm going to big sell you what's on your DVR right now, the profile on him.
Awesome.
But I also want to add one thing to it, which is this thing that they do talk about in the profile piece, where he basically suspends flowers in a big, huge block of ice.
Ooh.
And they were featured in a recent fashion show. And he makes these like making of videos of how they did it. And so he has like a YouTube page of all the things that he's kind of put together, these installations and stuff. So I wanted to sell you the CBS Sunday Morning program and the making of iced flowers, which is on his YouTube page.
I love it. I love everything about it.
Yeah.
Japanese gardening, TV. That's everything.
It's all you need.
It's all I need. Thank you so much. That's that's an out of the box big sell. I love it.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much, Amita, for that big sell. You'll get to hear all about my feelings about that big sell in next week's episode, which is a very special episode.
Why is it so special, Sean?
100 episodes. It is our 100th episode. And we will pull out the stops for our 100th episode. So please tell your friends, tell your wife, tell your husband and your kids.
Tell your great-grandmother who's watching CBS Sunday morning. Stop watching and listen to this.
Next week, the Inside Pop 100th episode extravaganza is going to be live up in your earbuds.
I feel so much pressure.
I know, me too.
Just by that description.
I have no idea what we're doing, but it's going
to
be big.
We don't. It's going to be amazing. Just you need to know how amazing it's going to be, especially because we have no idea how amazing it's going to be. Now you need to know what's going to happen next week. So please.
If you'd like to wish us a happy 100th episode, or if you have any commentary on what you've heard in this episode, feel free to tweet us at Pop Insiders. And you can also visit us on our official webpage at insidepoppodcast.com.
Yeah, and also check us out on Instagram and Facebook. We got a Facebook page, y'all. So come over there, like, follow, leave us a comment on the page as well. And, of course, you can also find us on MaximumFun.org along a plethora of amazing podcasts dedicated to comedy and culture.
Some of them have done 100 episodes. Some of them haven't, like us. So...
But we're going to join the 100 Club. Is that a club? I don't know.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and I'll see you next week.
Have a great week, y'all. Bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.